Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
I met you in the dark, you lit me up. You made me feel as though I was enough. We danced the night away, we drank too much. I held your hair back when you were throwing up. Then you smiled over your shoulder, for a minute I was stone cold sober. I pulled you closer to my chest, and you asked me to stay over. I said, I already told you, I think that you should get some rest. Oh, I knew I loved you then, but you never know. 'Cause I played it cool when I was scared of letting go. I knew I needed you, but I never showed. But I wanna stay with you until we're gray and old. And just say you won't let go. Say you won't let go. I'll wake you up with some breakfast in bed. I'll bring you coffee with a kiss on your head. And I'll take the kids to school, wave them goodbye. I thank my lucky stars for that night. When you looked over your shoulder, for a minute I forget that I'm older. I wanna dance with you right now. And you look as beautiful as ever. I swear every day will get better. You make me feel this way somehow. I'm so in love with you, I hope you know. Darling, your love is more than worth its weight in gold. We've come so far, my dear, look how we've grown. I wanna stay with you until we're gray and old. Just say you won't let go. Say you won't let go.
Welcome to another episode of Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle. That tune was James Arthur, Say You Won't Let Go. I'm glad all my listeners are tuning in this Friday evening, and I want to thank everybody from north to south, east to west, and everybody in Hawaii, the United States, France, Germany, Senegal, Australia, the United Kingdom, Canada, Nigeria and Cameroon, Africa, Singapore, Pakistan, Iraq, Peru, Russia, India, and the Netherlands. So, you know, we're growing. You know, I guess the way we do it, you know, you like how we sit here and we get comfortable, like hanging out with your friends. But tonight we got a special guest, Mark Pendergrass, and he's going to talk about the different subjects, and he wrote a lot of nonfiction. And for those who are not into literature like that, nonfiction means these books are true. So don't get the non and, you know, confusing thing. It don't mean it's a real, because it's all real. And we're going to discuss The Most Hated Man in America, Memory Warp, Uncommon Ground for, and For God, and, you know, a lot of things. This guy's wrote 11 books. He's phenomenal. So, but before we bring him on, I need to say hello to my awesome co-host that holds me up every Friday. Let me say hi to Mark. How you doing, darling?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to hold you up.
All right, baby. Got a lot to hold up, Atlas. And I want to say hi to my darling radio son, Chris. How you doing, baby?
Hello, how are you? Happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday, baby. And so without further ado, I'm going to welcome our guest, Mark Pendergrass. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, anytime, anytime. You're phenomenal. You know, when I did my little research about you, you've done so many things. You know, I want to get into these books real quick, but I first want to ask, tell me a little bit about yourself coming up before we jump into the side of these books about Most Hated Man in America.
Well, I am 69 years old. I've been writing books since 1991 full-time for a profession, and before that I was a librarian, and I was a school teacher, and I did a bunch of other things too. But I sort of found my niche in running around the world and writing things, and my research has taken me to Latin America and Africa and Asia and Europe and all around the United States. So it's been an interesting ride so far.
Wow. Well, bless your heart. That is interesting. You know, well, I see right now, baby, you love to read. I mean, and to be a librarian, that's a lot of sorting of books. Couldn't be me.
Yeah, I finally decided I should be writing them instead of checking them out.
That's right. So without further ado, I'm going to ask Mark to ask his first question, and then I'm going to go to Chris.
Hi, Mark. This is Mark. I know that sounds like a hair-lipped dog, but, you know, when I learned that you were our guest tonight, I just assumed that you were the most hated man in America, and I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be fun. But it's the name of one of your books that I was relieved to find. Can you, for our listeners, can you tell us a little bit more about The Most Hated Man in America? And it's not Trump, like somebody thought it was.
No, that's right.
About a third of the people in the country think Donald Trump is okay, whereas virtually, you know, maybe 0.1% of the people think that Jerry Sandusky is okay. So the whole name of the book is The Most Hated Man in America, Jerry Sandusky and the Rush to Judgment. And as I think you probably all know, Jerry Sandusky was a defensive coach for Penn State for about 30 years until he retired in 1999. He also started a program for troubled youth called the Second Mile for kids, most of whom came from single-family homes or were in foster care and had trouble in school and with the law. And it was for boys and girls, but he got in trouble for allegedly molesting a whole bunch of the Second Mile kids when they were like 10 to 15 or something like that. And he was found guilty in a trial in 2012, and it caused a huge uproar. It ruined Coach Joe Paterno's long career. They fired him as a result of it because he supposedly knew what Sandusky was doing, and a whole bunch of other people were accused, and it's cost probably over $1 billion in terms of lawsuits and settlements and lost employment and the end of an organization. The Second Mile is no more helping children. And I became interested in this case and realized that it wasn't what it appeared to be when someone alerted me and said, you should look at the Sandusky case because it involves a lot of repressed memory therapy as evidence. So I need to explain. that I had written several books about memory and how it works. And there's a kind of therapy that became very, very popular in the late 1980s and early 1990s, which said that if you were traumatized as a child, if you had terrible things happen to you, that it would be so terrible that you would completely forget it. You would repress the memory and not know that these terrible things happened to you until later in life when you went to therapy and they help you remember it, and then that's the only way you would get better, that the reason you were having whatever problems you had in life were because you had been abused. And almost all of these were sexual abuse cases. Well, it turns out that's not how memory works. As you probably all know from your own experience, the things that you tend to remember the best are terrible things. The worst things that happen to you, you might not want to think about them, but you sure as hell remember them. You don't forget them, especially if they happened throughout your whole childhood. So this was a very pernicious myth, the myth of repressed memory. So when somebody told me that, I said, well, I'll look at anything, but you know, I heard about this Sandusky case, and this guy was supposed to have been observed. You know, an eyewitness saw him sodomizing a child in the shower, and everybody knows this story. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just said, Lord have mercy. You mean tell me he had just a place for kids, you know, and then how many kids did he violate? I mean, and he... And he's been revered for 30 years in the sports world, but this charity thing he's doing, he's violating these little kids.
Well, that's what everybody thought. I have concluded that, no, he did not violate any kids. He's entirely innocent. The man has been railroaded, and that's what my book is about. So I know that I'm not going to convince anybody completely on a radio program. So my mantra for this book has become RTB, read the book. It's $20 on Amazon, or you can get it on Kindle for $8. And it's an amazing, amazing story. So if you'll allow me, I can explain why I think he didn't do any of it.
Okay. Over to here.
All right. Okay. So I started with this story of somebody seeing him in the shower. The guy was named Mike McQuarrie. And he was a graduate student who was sort of an assistant coach at the time. And he went into a locker room to put some shoes away one evening, and he heard slapping sounds coming out of a shower. And he thought they sounded like sexual sounds. Now, this was only a couple of seconds. But when he went into the locker room, he looked into the mirror to look into the shower, and he saw a boy's face appear, and he saw an arm reach out and grab the boy back. And he thought, oh, my God, it must be somebody having sex with a boy. And then he saw Sandusky and the boy walk out of the shower. And so he was very alarmed, and he went and he talked to his father and his father's friend about this. And they kept saying to him, the friend, but, Mike, what did you actually see? You heard slapping sounds that you thought sounded sexual. Did you actually witness anything? What did you see? And, well, Mike didn't see anything. So instead of telling him to turn this into the police, everybody knew that Sandusky, you know, would go and exercise with these kids, and sometimes he took showers with them, and he was a goofball who would play around and do dumb things. So they figured it was just him horsing around in the shower with a kid. But he said, if you're all upset about this, go and talk to Coach Paterno about it. And so Mike did. And Paterno basically decided, yeah, it was probably Sandusky horsing around in the shower, but he passed it up the line to his boss, the head of the athletic department, who passed it on to his boss, who passed it on to the president of the college. And then... Tim Curley, who was the head of the athletic department, went and talked to Sandusky and said, what was going on? And he said, well, I was with a kid named Alan Myers. Well, he didn't tell him that. He told him he knew who the kid was and that they had been slap boxing and snapping towels at each other in the shower. Now, you might think this is a weird thing for a 50-year-old to do, but that's the way he was. He grew up in a recreation department that his parents ran, and it's basically sort of the world that he grew up in. And he loved his parents who had helped all these kids, and that's why he started this program to help kids. Anyway, he said to Curly, do you want to talk to this kid? Do you want to talk to the kid that was in the shower? Curly said, no, I don't need to do that. But listen, it just doesn't look right, so don't bring any more kids to the showers in Penn State. And he said, okay, I won't. And that was the end of it. That was in 2001.
Well, welcome to the socialistic.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry, go ahead. That was me. Go ahead.
Okay. So what happened was 10 years later, when allegations against Sandusky came up from someone else, and which I'll talk about in a while, the police found out that McQueary had allegedly seen something or heard something, and they went to talk to him about it. And McQueary, he didn't need psychotherapy to change his memory. None of us need psychotherapy to change our memory. We all do it all the time, especially if it's something that's far in the past. So he changed what he'd remembered. Now he remembered actually seeing Sandusky in the shower behind a kid moving his hips, which is not what he had said 10 years before. And that became the most famous thing about this case, and that is what brought down Paterno, and that is what brought down everybody else. So when I discovered that that's what had really happened, and then this kid, Alan Myers, did come forward, and he said, yes, I was with him in the shower. He was an important mentor to me. I had him stand up at my senior high school game instead of my father. I drove 6 hours to go to his mother's funeral. I lived with Jerry and Dottie Sandusky for a summer after I got out of college. He's a great guy, and in that shower, we were snapping towels at each other, and I was running around and slapping against the wall, and no, he never abused me at all. So Tim Curley had asked him to talk to that kid, none of this would have happened. This all would have gone away, but he didn't. And so Tim Curley ended up being accused of hiding this and was put in prison for a while. Paterno was fired and died 2 months later. The college president, Graham Spanier, was fired and is being prosecuted for having hidden things. It's absolutely an amazing, amazing story. I'll be quiet and let you guys talk. Sorry.
Okay, well, Mark, real quick, I'm going to let Chris ask his question because something you said, I need to break in on that. But I'll let Chris ask his question first before we go to break.
All right, Mark, my name is Chris Michael Ward. My question is, I came across an interview you did on YouTube, and you said when you was researching this book, you actually knew the Sandusky, you actually spent time with the Sandusky family, correct?
Well, I interviewed them on the phone, and I met Dottie and one of the sons, and I went and visited Sandusky in prison a couple of times. That's right.
Okay.
And the reason I did that was, you know, they could not have children on their own. So they adopted 6 children, some of whom had been foster children with them before. And the reason they could not have children is that Jerry Sandusky has a very low sperm count. He has low testosterone, which would not lend you to think that he would be this oversexed monster that he's been portrayed to be. And I figured that if he was really a pedophile and these kids weren't related to him by blood and, you know, 5 out of 6 of them were boys, that he would have molested them or, you know, come on to them or done something weird. But when I interviewed 4 of them, they said no. Well, I interviewed 5 of them and the girl and the 4 boys. They all told me the same thing. Dad is a touchy-feely guy. He's a wonderful, decent human being. He never molested us. He was a wonderful father. He would lead the 4th of July parade throughout the neighborhood with all the kids. And no, he didn't do anything, and we don't believe he did anything to anybody else. The problem is he treated these second mile kids like he treated us, as if they were his children. So that's what they told me. Now, the sixth child is named Matt Sandusky, and he also had stood up and defended his father under oath during the grand jury presentations and said, no, Dad never did anything to me. But in the middle of the trial, guess what he did? He started going to therapy to remember things that must have happened to him. And now he's accused him of all kinds of gross things that he never remembered before. So I was not able to interview him.
Let me jump in here real quick. Now, you said that this guy, for people who come in late, the most hated man in America, I was assuming he was talking about Trump, but he was talking about this coach and how
former
he,
coach, retired coach.
Yeah, retired coach. How he did 30 years coaching, and he had the secondary, what's it called, the second mile for?
Second mile program for troubled kids.
Yes, okay. Now, y'all say that he was quirky and fun and touchy-feely, but, you know, this man, you know, Quasis Kep, I'm just going to say this. This man was not a father, an uncle, or a cousin, but he can get buck naked in a shower playing with some child, not even a teenager. But when you think about Michael Jackson, and people say that he let kids sleep over in his bed and stuff, you know, everybody in uproar, oh, Michael Jackson is a pedophile, but no ever allegations of something as egregious as this, because I don't care what y'all say, I don't care about nobody's repressed memory or current memory. If I thought that my child was under 12 in some shower with a coach butt naked, you know, we won't have to step to him. You know, I'm sorry. I just don't.
I understand that. A lot of people think that, and I can understand them being upset. But let me just clarify: this kid was 13, almost 14, so he wasn't quite as young as you were saying. But a lot of people think that's just terrible and assume he must be guilty because he did something that our society now considers totally inappropriate. But as I said, he grew up in a recreation center in Washington, Pennsylvania, where his parents and him lived on the second floor. There was no shower, so they took showers, the boys and the men, together all the time. And he grew up where, you know, one of his favorite things to do was to fill up water balloons and throw them, you know, out of his car at people when he was a teenager. He was a practical joker. And he, you know, I asked him about this. I said, were you completely insane to go
really?
And shower alone with kids? And he said, I would work out with them because I wanted to demonstrate to them that they should exercise. I encouraged them to do well in school. Of course, you always take a shower after you exercise. And, yeah, I'm a goofball. And I was trying to be, he used the word enthusiasm. He said, you know, a lot of these kids had no childhood. They had no father. So I was trying to provide someone who was kind and decent and playful and fun for them. And I also interviewed a lot of these second mile kids who did not accuse him, which is the vast majority, and they all told me the same thing. Yeah, he would squeeze your knee in the car. Yeah, he would hug you, but no, he was not a pedophile. He was just a wonderful, decent human being. So you can think what you like, and I'm not going to convince you that it's okay for him to have taken showers with the kids. But it's very unlikely that he actually did anything to any of them.
Okay, well,
and his wife has been, you know, most pedophiles have pornography on their computers or in their house,
right.
Child pornography. This guy had none. Most of them, if they are a serial pedophile, maybe some of them didn't tell anybody, but some of them told at least one of their best friends or their parents or a teacher or somebody what was going on at the time. None of them told anybody anything. Most pedophiles, when they get caught, they will admit that they have done something, but they'll rationalize it. They'll say, oh, I just really love them or something, but yes, we did this. Sandusky has maintained his innocence from the very beginning and still does. Most pedophiles, like Larry Nassar, the coach that was found, I mean, the gymnastics trainer who was found guilty, when he was arrested, his wife left him. Sandusky's wife has been totally faithful to him, continues to believe in his innocence, and visits him every week in jail. So he doesn't match the profile of somebody that you would expect to be doing this. And as I said, the police hunted, they basically went on a trawling expedition trying to find kids, telling them if they didn't say anything that they must be wrong and that they had to remember it, encouraging them to go to therapy and to help remember it. I was able to interview one of the accusers named Dustin Strubel, who told me, yes, it was all repressed memory. I asked him, what would you have told me about Sandusky in 2010 before you went to the police? And he said, I would have said he was a great guy, a mentor, and a friend. I had everything negative blocked out. And so it was only when I went to repressed memory therapy that I began to remember all this.
Well, Mark, on that note, we need to come back. We need to take a little small break, and we'll be back in 2 and 2. If anybody would like to ask a question, call in to 347-945-6003. Hit the 1 key, and it'll let me know on the switchboard that you got a comment or a question, and you can talk to our guest yourself. So stay with us. We'll be back in 2 and 2.
Okay.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello? Hey, it's Mike. Hey, how you doing? Oh, yeah, everything's good. It's just been really good. Sorry I haven't been here this week. Yeah. I was a cop, but I will be there this week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey man, I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own God. But things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen it.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Who is that, man?
Oh, hell no. I know ain't nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day, going day.
Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
I'm
got the job when no one else was there, helping you get on your feet. 11 years of sacrifice, and you can leave me at the drop of a dime. Swallow my fear, stood by your side. I should have left you.
Not going to cry. Welcome back to Unmasked with authorist Terry E. Lyle and our guest Mark Pendergrass. We was talking about some of his nonfiction books, and one we was talking about recently was The Most Hated Man in America. And contrary to popular belief, it wasn't Donald Trump, but to me, it would be Donald Trump. But anyway, Mark's opinion was that this coach that coached for 30 years, he's retired now, and he's serving time because he had a secondary the second mile facilities for troubled youth, and he was alleged that he had molested a lot of those kids. And then someone came along and said that he saw him in the bathroom, in the shower, naked with the kid, and heard some slapping sounds that sounded sexual, you know. And his thing is that, you know, Mark's belief is that the guy is innocent. He said that sexual predators or pedophiles, they don't lie about what they do, you know. Not from the TV I be watching on Steve Wilco, man. They lie out their butt, you know. They won't tell the truth until the lie detector accuses them, you know. So this is my opinion, you know, and we all got an opinion. So, you know, obviously someone else, you know, felt that way or he wouldn't be doing time. But Mark's stance is that the guy is innocent. My stance is that, you know, I don't care who you are. You know, I think it's inappropriate. This is not a child of your own, and you're a 50-something-year-old man and a 13, 14-year-old child. You're in a shower naked. You know, if you're making bad choices, I don't care whether you got porno on your laptop or computer, because some people are good at concealing stuff, just like these murderers out there. Jeffrey Dahmer, didn't anybody know that he was killing guys and eating their body parts? Didn't anybody know, you know, all these people who got caught? You know, you never know. The guy was a Gacy, played the clown, and what's the other guy, Ted, who was looking so professional, getting these college students. So, you know, you can't never say infinite, you know, definitely that this person is innocent unless you saw it, unless you was there. But, you know, that's just my take, you know, so I'm going to shut my mouth and I'm going to let Chris jump in there as I open everybody's mic back up, because it just makes no sense, no sense that this is going on. So, Chris, darling, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, Mark, this is Chris Michael Ward. My question is, you said you spoke to one of the boys who allegedly got molested. But did you try to contact any of the other victims?
Yes, I did, but their lawyers wouldn't let me speak to them. Let me just respond to what Terry said, though, because she went kind of on a rant there. Terry, you have not read my book, is that correct?
No, I didn't get a book. And when you say
right.
Send a PF, I don't be able
so
to
would,
like
that. I would urge you, I would suggest that before you draw conclusions about it, that you read it. And the same thing with everybody else. I did not say that pedophiles never lie. I said that once serial pedophiles get caught, you know, and they get accused, and all these people come forward and said, he did this to me, most of them do not maintain their innocence. They say, oh, well, yes, I did that, but it was consensual, or it was true love, or it wasn't really this or that. So that's what I was trying to say, was that Sandusky was not like that. I understand your point that you don't like men showering with children alone. And playing games with them and slapping around and things like that, even if it's not sex. I respect your opinion on that, but that's not illegal. It's what you think is totally inappropriate, but it's not something illegal. And in fact, this man helped many, many, many children to improve their lives, to go to school, to be responsible, and help them get scholarships. And I know many pedophiles are also nice guys and can help people get scholarships. I'm just telling you that having looked at this case very, very carefully for several years and written a very detailed and very well-researched book about it, I make a very compelling and reasonable case that he is probably innocent.
Well, Mark,
so I hope people read the book, that's all.
I hope that he prays about it. Because there are some people that I know in the system that are innocent, you know. It's just that it looks so bad because he should have a better choice. Because as a mother, as a female, no one would want to think that that kind of behavior is going on. Whether he was clowning and joking, that's his characteristic. He should have known better, you know.
Well, he should have known better, but he didn't. You know, most of his kids told me he lived in a Leave It to Beaver world. A sort of world of the 1950s of innocence. He was unbelievably stupid in terms of what is appropriate nowadays to do with kids. I totally agree. He should not have done that. It was dumb. But having gotten to know him fairly well now, and his family and his wife, I am quite convinced that he did not do any of these things. Now, maybe I'm wrong, you know, because you're right. I wasn't there. You weren't there either. But I do know a lot about the case now, and there are things I haven't talked about yet. For instance, there was one of the things he was accused of is what I call the phantom victim. Supposedly, there was a janitor who also saw him doing this terrible thing in the shower, a different one, and he was freaked out by it, and he told his fellow janitors about it. And then he later got Alzheimer's disease, and so this janitor didn't testify. But the other janitor who he told testified by hearsay. So this is sort of like double hearsay testimony. It should never have been allowed in the courtroom at all, but it was. Well, guess what? It turns out that that janitor, before he became a victim of Alzheimer's, he gave an interview with the police. And it was tape recorded, and it was given to the defense. But
right.
The defense, I don't think, ever listened to it. And I have listened to it. And the janitor says, oh, yes, I saw this. You know, he was sucking on that boy, but it was an older boy. It was probably about 18. And, oh, it was just awful. I've never seen such a terrible thing. And the policeman says, yeah, well, was it Jerry Sandusky? No, it wasn't Coach Sandusky. He would never, no, it wasn't him. Are you sure? Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Was that ever brought out at court? No, it was not. Was it brought out on appeal? No, it was not. It's amazing. So I also went through the entire trial and how it transpired, and it was just it was one of the worst defenses I have ever seen.
Well, let me ask
seen.
You this real quick, Mark. Did you ever take your information to the lawyer that's supposed to be representing this guy that's incarcerated to try to help him with what you found out? Did you try to help? I know you might not be an attorney, but did you do anything to share your information with his lawyer so he could get out?
Yes. He has new lawyers now who are trying to get a new trial for him. It's called post-conviction relief application. And their names are Al Lindsay and Andrew Salem. And, yes, I have talked to them. And they have presented a very, very strong case that he deserves a new trial. And I think anybody who reads my book will conclude that even if you thought he was guilty, he certainly deserves a new trial, because the trial took place in a media hysteria where he had already been found guilty in the court of public opinion. And, you know, no juror in State College, Pennsylvania, would have dared face their spouse if they had said that he was not guilty. So there was no way he was going to get a fair trial under those circumstances. He had hired a small-town lawyer to defend him, who was in way, way over his head. And it was a terrible trial. But what has happened so far with the post-conviction relief is that they have turned it down. The first judge did. And now it goes to the next level of the Superior Court, I think. And eventually it may go to the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. I do not expect in Pennsylvania he will ever be granted a new trial, because all of the judges in Pennsylvania are elected. And what
right.
judge is going to commit suicide with his career by giving the infamous Jerry Sandusky a new trial? None of them are. But
okay.
after it goes through Pennsylvania, then you can go to the federal level. And I think that there's an overwhelming case that he deserves a new trial, and I'm confident that he will get one eventually, but it probably will take another couple of years.
Okay, well, Mark, I'm going to let the other Mark ask the question, but I'm going to say this real quick. You know, if he's proven by some chance to be innocent, how do you compensate for a loss of life that was stuck in a penal system? You know, that's just crazy. But anyway, Mark, go ahead and ask your question.
No, Mark, in a recent article you wrote about we were talking about Larry Nassar, the gymnast coach, who was recently convicted, and his myofascial release treatments that he performed on these young girl gymnasts.
That's right.
Can you enlighten us about these treatments and the difference between it being a beneficial medical treatment and an outright sexual assault?
Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, can you?
Yeah. You know, it's pretty amazing that Larry Nassar got away with this, of putting his finger inside young gymnasts, into their vaginas and into their anuses, and probing around, and nobody told on him. Well, some of them did tell, but everybody dismissed it and said, oh, that's just a legitimate medical procedure, because there is this thing called myofascial release therapy for pelvic pain. The idea is that you're loosening up muscles that are causing you problems. So he convinced most of these young girls that what he was doing was actually beneficial to them and reasonable. Now, I am very dubious about anybody who does this, but guess what? A lot of osteopaths and physical therapists do this same thing. And continue to say that it's perfectly okay to do, and some of them are females. I don't think it's a good idea, and I think it's probably just pseudoscience, something along the lines of repressed memory therapy. But what Nassar did clearly was over the line because he didn't use a glove. He used his bare hands, which is unhygienic. And he had tons of child pornography in his possession, which would indicate that he was probably getting off on this. So that's what I was writing about. I was trying to explain why he got away with it. And my article, as you saw, was saying it's very different from the Sandusky case.
Right.
So, but people compare them all the time because they were both in the sports world.
And you hesitate to call them monsters, right?
And they're both called monsters, that's right. I don't like calling, frankly, I don't like calling anybody a monster because it sort of makes it easy to hate everybody and say, oh, they're totally different from me. I would never do such a thing. So I'm just not into name-calling that much.
Well, that's good, Mark. Well, my younger co-host, Chris, jumping in and ask you a question because we've got only 13 minutes left on the clock.
Okay, Mark, you did a book about Coca-Cola. What was that like?
Oh, that's a much more fun thing to talk about. It was my first book. It's now in its third edition. It's called For God, Country, and Coca-Cola. And it's a history of how Coca-Cola came to be the second most widely known word in the world after OK, how it became the world's most single widely distributed product. And yet it's really just sugar water. With some interesting other ingredients, and I found the secret formula, which I put in the book, and it turns out that it was invented in 1886 by a pharmacist named John Pemberton, who was a morphine addict, and he was interested in cocaine as a new wonder drug in the 1880s that he thought would help him and other people get off of the morphine habit, and was also an aphrodisiac and made everything better and cured a disease called neurasthenia, which didn't really exist. And so it was sold as a nerve tonic. There were a whole bunch of nerve tonics that had various drugs. Coca-Cola had coca leaf, which is what cocaine comes from, and it had cola nut, which has a lot of caffeine in it. So it had cocaine and caffeine. Not a huge amount, but enough to, you know, have an impact. So it was a soda fountain drink, but it was also a patent medicine that was supposed to cure your headaches and whatever else ailed you. And eventually it became the symbol of the American way of life.
I don't know if you remember or not, Mark, but when I was young, when I was sick, I don't know what kind of sickness I had, my mother used to give us, it's like straight, thick Coca-Cola, the drink. It's not the soda. It was like syrupy, like, and I forgot
what
it was.
It was Coca-Cola syrup.
Yeah, and I don't know what it was used for, but I remember getting some of that as a child. Do you remember what it was for?
Yeah. It's supposed to help a stomach ache and whatever else ailed you. Coca-Cola syrup is the concentrated stuff that they would then mix in a soda fountain drink, 1 ounce to 5 ounces of soda water, of fizzy water, to make the Coke. And you could buy it in the old days just as the pure syrup. So, yeah, it was a home remedy for a lot of people. It's also very good for getting the corrosion off of your car battery. Yeah. No,
wow.
I think the Coca-Cola story is an amazing one, and I hope people will get that book. It's quite long, I'll warn you. It's a big book, but it's just fascinating, and it goes through the history of how Coca-Cola was served inside Nazi Germany at the same time that it was being given exemption from sugar rationing for the U.S. troops. It's just an amazing story.
It sounds like it is. Yeah, you know, I wish I had found that PDF file that you sent me about the most hated man in America, because a lot of times I get to my computer and we have like 800, 900 emails, and if I don't see nothing right away on that first page, I just delete the whole thing.
I see.
Goodness.
Let me just mention, I also wrote a history of coffee that people probably would be interested in called Uncommon Grounds. I wrote a history of mirrors called Mirror, Mirror, which has a lot about astronomy and how light works and magic mirrors and all kinds of weird things like that. I wrote a book about epidemiology, about disease detectives trying to figure out what's causing an epidemic, called Inside the Outbreaks. So we could talk a long time about all those.
I want to read all of them.
Yeah, at this particular time, is it possible you can give us every title of your 11 books and also tell people how they can connect with you on your media sites or web pages?
Well, if you look up Mark Pendergrast on Amazon, you'll find all of them. But if you want them all in one place, my website is markpendergrast.com, and you can email me directly from that website also. Let me see. I'm not sure I can remember all of them. There's Japan's Tipping Point, which is about Japanese lack of renewable energy at the time that the Fukushima nuclear meltdown happened. I went to Japan to research that. There's one called Beyond Fair Trade, which is another coffee-related book about a hill tribe in Thailand, which was growing opium poppies and has switched to growing fine coffee, thank goodness, and is doing very, very well doing that. I wrote some children's books. I wrote one called Jack and the Bean Soup, which is sort of a fractured fairy tale version of Jack and the Beanstalk. It's kind of an elaborate children's fart joke book. Jack, he makes the soup. The soup has a major impact on him. I wrote another children's book called Silly Sadie, which is kind of, you know, a Frog Prince type book. I wrote one called The God Fool, which is kind of a philosophical book about people making fun of people who aren't like just like them. I'm trying to think. What else? I get confused myself, but I think I've named most of them.
Yeah, a plethora of books, and that's wonderful because all of them are, you know, engaging to be read. But before we get up out of here, I'm going to let my co-host Mark get his last question in.
Oh, thank you, Terry. You know, you write in your books about a moral panic going on, Mark. Can you see any of that happening in the Me Too movement where powerful, prominent men are taken down by sexual accusations? Can you see any of that?
Yes, I do see some of it. I want to be careful about this because I think that the Me Too movement, people like Harvey Weinstein clearly did do everything he's being accused of. And it has been, I think, a good thing in many ways, bringing out of the closet the extent of sexual harassment. I bet, Terry, that you have been sexually harassed. I bet every woman in America has been by the time they're 25 years old. What do you say to that?
I think a lot of people are on a witch hunt. You know, some things that they're hollering sexual harassment is really not that. Sometimes people can be playful and joking around, and they don't mean no harm. But, you know, because you say the wrong thing or you touch my arm or my back, people can blow it up to be more than what it is. Like,
well,
you know,
that's what I was about to come up to. I agree with you. So, yes, I think that although real sexual harassment does happen
right,
far too often, but now they've taken down people like Garrison Keillor because he hugged somebody and barely touched them on their back. So it's ridiculous. So, yes, it has gone overboard. And some of them, allegations, I believe, are based on repressed memory therapy also. So you got to look out for whether they always remembered what it is they're saying.
Well, real quick, can I ask you this? Do you know how to do that repressed therapy thing? Because I know when I was out in California, these people were praying for me, and they were trying to say they could bring up repressed memory. I don't know if it's true or not, but do you know how to do that? Is it
do I know how they do it? Yes. Read the book Memory Warp. And you'll learn all about it. They'll tell you that you have all the symptoms of someone who was sexually abused, and that if you don't remember it, that you're never going to get better. And so, if you believe that, and many people do, then they'll say, "Well, how would I remember?" And they say, "Well, we can hypnotize you, Only hypnosis is a terrible way to remember anything. It's a very good way to suggest you into something. Or they'll tell you you might dream about it. And if you're obsessing about something and worrying about it, you do dream about it.
Right.
And then you take that as proof. So it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Or they'll tell you that you might have a panic attack or there's a flashback to something that happened to you. So once you get in your head that this might have happened to you, a lot of people never did remember anything and just acted as if they had been abused. It became a real epidemic in the early 1990s.
Okay, real quick, Mark, let me ask you this question. Do you have any books where I don't have to go to Amazon because I would like an autographed copy of The Most Hated Man in America and Memory Warp? You can send me an invoice, and I'll pay it via PayPal. And if you got that, that would be nice, and you got my email address. And also, Chris, you got 1 minute to get a question in, darling.
Okay, Mark, are you on Facebook and Twitter? Can people find you on there?
Yeah, I'm not real big on doing them, but on Twitter I use Memory Warp is the title of it. And there's I'm on Facebook. I have a personal page. I have a Memory Warp page. Oh, I know. I forgot to tell you. I have another book called City on the Verge, which is about my hometown of Atlanta. And there's a City on the Verge Facebook page also. So if you're from Atlanta, read City on the Verge. Or if you're not.
That sounds very interesting.
Well, I'm looking for a PayPal invoice. I like to get those two books, but I want mine's autographed. If I go to Amazon, it will just come straight from them. I won't get your autograph. I want it autographed to me.
Okay. Well, why don't you email me and remind me? I'm away from home right now, so I couldn't help you right now. But I'll. Can you email me like on Tuesday? I'll be home.
Okay. What's your email address?
You have it, but it's Mark P. MarkP. 508.
You say 508?
At gmail.com.
Okay, Mark P is in Paul.
Right?
508 at gmail.com?
I think.
Okay.
It's 508. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I said Mark P, then 508.
Yes, at gmail.com.
Gmail.
That's it. You got it. You got it.
Okay, wait till Tuesday. Well, darling, I sure appreciate you being on the show tonight. Man, I should have gave you a hour and a half because I like talking to you. Got a lot of stuff I'm interested in, but we got to get up out of here. We got 1 minute, so y'all take care. Thank you for tuning in. Call me. You got the number.
Never would have made it. Never could have made it without you. I would have lost it all. But now how you were there for me, and I can say, never would have made it, never could have made it without you. I would have lost it all, but now I see how you were there for me, and I can say, I'm stronger, I'm wiser, I'm better.